Welcome to Coffee Conversations with Stephen Hayward of Project X. This is a time where, hopefully over a good cup of coffee, we're having some conversations with various people around the industry that might be of interest to you, our lovely listener. Hope you'll enjoy this episode of Coffee Conversations. Welcome, everyone, to the sixth episode of Coffee Conversations. I'd like to welcome Jim Hayward to the table here at the Don Cesar in lovely St. Pete's Beach, Florida. We're sitting here drinking a Starbucks, which we found the other day from someone. But welcome, Jim.
Thank you very much, Pete. Good to be here.
Yeah, so Jim is, other than my father, he is the co-founder of Gelman Hayward. He sits on Project X's advisory board, and we pulled him out of retirement to do some senior consulting for us. So, Jim, maybe if you want to just say a couple words about yourself for the folks outside.
Yeah, I've been in the technology business for a long time. I think I started in the consulting business in 1965, and I've actually worked with Harvey Gelman ever since 65 till we closed the, well, sold the place, and then I moved on in the late 90s, and so long history. And now I, instead of being paid for the work I do, I pay for the work I do, which is trying to improve my golf game and having a great time and doing a few other things. But I'm enjoying working with Steve on his new company and all that, so it's great fun.
And you're also the kind of bridge to how Graham and I met through Senge Circle, which is a segue into the conversation we're going to have today.
Yeah, we had a... back to the history of our little Senge Circle was back in, 1991 or 92. Gelman Hayward was having a bit of a struggle, and one of our partners had discovered this book called The Fifth Discipline by Peter Senge. And he thought it was a really quite a profound book, and he thought the partner should all read it and see if we could learn from it. And it's a really fascinating book. Actually, Burry Foss, I think, was the one who called it to our attention. Excuse me. And we read it, and we thought it was quite profound. I really love some of the metaphors in it. They are just awesome. And so as we were talking about it amongst ourselves, we realized we didn't really understand it, and maybe we should start a little discussion group to talk about it and see if we get the ideas from it. Well, then somebody said, you know, if we just have a discussion group of Gelman Hayward people, that's kind of talking to ourselves. Why don't we invite a few people from the outside and get some other ideas? So we opened it up to a bunch of other people, and that was in 1992. And we have been meeting basically monthly, except for the summers and things, since that time. We got through the fifth discipline and then moved on to other books and other ideas and really fascinating stuff. I mean, we've covered some really quite challenging and interesting books.
You even got us to talk about The Power of Now.
Oh, yes, The Power of Now. That was one of the fun books. But there were so many books that... and I still... the metaphors in The Fifth Discipline, though, I think are just absolutely priceless. You'll see on the blog the one about the boiled frog, which is straight out of The Fifth Discipline. And
yeah.
There's a...
well, and, you know, right now we're talking about the power of productivity and in terms of the way that globalization is changing marketplaces and stuff like that. Being able to see that McKinsey study on each country and getting a view that, you know, unless you lived there and really were working there, you probably wouldn't get a great view. And it's dispelling a lot of myths for me.
Yeah, quite profound. This power of productivity really is amazing in terms of the insights that the guy gives you about various countries and their development. It's a little bit biased towards U.S. and competitiveness and that sort of thing, a kind of a bias, but other than that, I mean, it is phenomenal.
But we've challenged that whole premise every time someone will go and say, well, I'm thinking this is all U.S. focused. But they do a really good job. They just the problem is to make it so that you had a baseline, they decided the U.S. was the baseline, which means they're always comparing everything to the U.S., which makes it seem like you are. But they're very credible, I think, in terms of saying, well, you know, we were talking yesterday with one of your colleagues at the golf course on steel making, and he's working on a project in Korea where it's going to be 3 football fields long, this steel mill. And you know, one of the things that they talked about in that chapter was how great General Parks has done in creating this massive steel industry
in Korea.
In Korea. And it was just, you know, all these little things, they all come together. One of the things that you and I don't know when it was this week, we chatted about was going back to the Built to Last book and trying to figure out if we can remember which companies were there and which ones were still involved. So I'll read off the visionary. We won't talk about the comparators and kind of say, are they still doing well? 3M, Amex, Boeing, Citicorp, Ford, GE, HP, IBM, Johnson & Johnson, Marriott, Merck, Motorola, Nordstrom, Philip Morris, Procter & Gamble, Sony, Walmart, and Disney.
And that's amazing that every single one of those still is in existence. And that's a 94 book. And it was talking about companies that had lasted 50 years. And the comparator companies, which were all good performing companies at that time, their performance was like on 2 or 3 orders of magnitude below the performance of these visionary companies. And I would say over, I would look at the 50% or more are not even in existence anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, or they've really become very small entities or things like that. But yeah, largely. But, you know, the reason I was thinking of bringing that up was, in terms of change management, which is actually the official subtopic under the Senge Circle, which was what you were trying to do back at Gelman Hayward, was around, you know, 15 years ago or older, there was no email. There's, you know, when it wasn't, you couldn't even have conversations like blogging is now, where information is being shared, disseminated, re-seminated, rejigged, everybody sharing their thoughts. The velocity with which corporations are changing right now is absolutely monstrous. So, you know, the thing that brought me back to this chapter, that book, was around the fact that most of those companies, and I say most because a couple of them are all fast moving, even though they're really large organizations, are very fast moving. Like GE, if they're not number one or two in a segment, they shoot it. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're very fast, very Six Sigma, change management oriented. 3M, all about innovation and actually capitalizing on it versus Xerox and various other places.
So it's interesting, the book points out one of the things that the companies aren't is they really, none of them are in the business they were formed to be in. They're really adaptable companies that adapt to the circumstances which they find themselves, and they survive based on the fact that they can adapt, I believe. The other one that really amazes me in reading the book, and I would never have been aware of it before, is the courage that these companies have. The book talks about the big, hairy, audacious goal, eh?
Yeah.
And these companies bet the company. And, I mean, I believe that, because I was very cynical about IBM and its ability to survive, and I think by hiring Gerstner, they bet the company. And they keep betting the company on things which, you know, you wonder what the heck they're doing.
Well, like we were talking about the other night, their love affair with the PC, or love-hate relationship. They were first in, but didn't do it right. Then they went in big, and now they've gone and sold it to Lenovo.
And, you know, you got to admire them and the ability to be able to try and do things. Because I, personally, was quite cynical about the fact that they were going to survive. And we also, even at the time of that book, we read the book, we said they were kind of, they just got voted in because they were a charming company. They really didn't belong there because we didn't think they were going to survive. And here they are, and they're doing just fine, thank you very much, amazingly enough. And they bet, I mean, they talk about in the book, betting on the 360, which is an old one. But Boeing, for example, and betting the company on their bloody aircraft. I mean, they almost went under 3 or 4 times.
Yep.
And that, to me, so that's a lot of courage. And a lot of courage to change. You know, this ability to change and things. And it's a skill that requires a lot of insight and a lot of understanding of human, the personal psychology and social psychology and why people change. I mean, my real insight into the first time I really understood how change occurs was when Harvey and I discovered this book, this article by Bob Schaefer talking about readiness. And I mean, it's so simple. People are only do what they're ready to do. And that's the fundamental basis of change. Now, I remember the first time I got that insight, I thought, gosh, that is amazing. Cool. Oh, I just can't wait to go ahead and apply this. So the next client I came to, I said, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a readiness assessment of this guy. Well, I discovered at that moment I didn't know anything about readiness at all. I just knew the concept. I didn't know. And man, it took me ages and ages and ages to start understanding all the factors that influence readiness and people's readiness to change and everything else. And, you know, you can see it, especially these days where things happen so fast. And it's so scary that you have to have a lot of courage and a lot of impatience and a lot of stuff before you can really affect change. And IT projects are fundamental to change, you know. My personal opinion is that most people attack the IT delivery organization as the scapegoat so they won't change. They use it because no project is perfect. So they always can point out imperfections.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's really just easy to escape. I have this project way back with a customer information center. It was going to revolutionize and bring all the customer information into one location. And it was a phenomenal, it was billing and it was a lot of other things, but it was everything. And it was a hydro company. And we had the system ready and we run it and everything else. And the guys running the customer information center had excuses all the time as to why they shouldn't implement, that they were scared. And I got to bless the manager who was in charge of that area, the director. And what he did was, every week, he got together with the IT guys and the
business guys.
Yeah. He said, okay, what's your problems? He'd make a list of the problems. He'd make a list of actions to do. And they go through the actions. And they come get together the next week. Eventually, the guys in the customer information center just ran out of things. They just couldn't think of anything else. And so they implemented. And it was quite successful. It was amazing. And the funniest thing was, there were some problems that they didn't discover until they actually implemented. And they never would have discovered them, ever, if they didn't implement, you know?
Well, I mean, another good one that I always liked, there were two other scenarios I remember you telling me. One was a guy who was writing a piece of code for a utility, and you're going, well, when is it going to be finished? And the guy would be, you know, week after week after week. And then you did something, you asked him, well, what's different? Well, it was actually fine.
When did you meet the spec?
When did you meet the spec? Yeah.
And he said, oh, that was a month ago. And that's the engineering problem. We always talk about the engineers. They're never finished.
Yeah, the glass was engineered wrong if it's half full.
The other one is a famous quote I love, is that a work of art is never finished. It's abandoned. You know? So I think that's just the way things are. And nothing's perfect. They're just as good as they can be for now.
Another one I also liked, and I used it at one of the banks, in terms of talking to the end sponsor about how to kind of try and get it to completion, was carefully and selectively writing a note to the team explaining the benefit to the organization and how proud they were of everybody being in alignment.
Oh, yeah.
That whole, you know, that QA thing, kind of, as you say, about being abandoned. I mean, first of all, I think QA is the ugly stepchild of all IT projects, which no one really ever spends enough time or allots enough time for that QA test, fix, test, fix. kind of episode, but then you also can get into paralysis, QA paralysis, which says, you know, it takes you whatever, what is it they say, 80% of the time to get to 80% of the functionality, right, and another 80% to get that 20%. So, you know, this gentleman went and wrote a very well articulated memo or email internally to reinforce this, and all of a sudden you had that realignment again to the common goal of what the actual thing is.
Well, like, that was a huge project. I remember that project, and in fact the most humorous thing about that project, because it's about, I think, 10 or so years ago now, maybe even more, but the guy who wrote that memo lives on my street now. I mean, it's the most amazing. We talked about it just last year, and he remembered the whole situation where this quite revolutionary project related to managing the sales force in this organization was going to be implemented. And everybody was really reluctant to go with this thing because it was pretty scary to give that amount of control to the sales guys about making decisions on sales. And they were had all kinds of reasons why it wouldn't work and the model was wrong. And, oh, man, God, da-da-da-da-da. And what this guy did was he wrote a memo saying how important this project was to him and how much he appreciated the people and the effort they were making, and really it was going to be a great project, and he thanked them all and everything else. And that project was implemented within the month.
Yeah.
I mean, a marvelous thing. I remember a totally opposite example of that, but rated on expectations, this is a really a key thing. I remember a priest in our church wanted people to move in to the center of the pews so that the people coming in could get to on the outside. And the way he did that was before Mass every day, he thanked the people for moving into the center. And that's all he did. He never asked them to do it. He just thanked them for doing it. That was really neat. I think expectations is a really important part of readiness.
You know, the other one, and we talked about it in the blog, one of the Harvey Jim sayings was the drip methodology.
Oh, yes. Mm.
And I think that's very interesting. You always told me you can't push on a rope. And I used that last week in a facilitated session that Graham and I were working with, and Graham piped up as well, you could freeze it. That's just like saying, well, I can walk on water as long as it's the winter and the ice is frozen.
That's right.
So,
because one of the things we, in consulting, it's often that you have an insight into what's the problem long before the client really understands it. They'll intellectually acknowledge it, but they really won't internalize it. And it takes you some time for them to come round to the idea.
Well, partly due to the fact that, you know, we talk about all those unknown factors that we have no idea about what's going on in their day. We have no clue all the other stuff that affected them to be where they are today. We go and say, well, they're stuck because they can't see the forest for the trees. But you know what? They live it day in, day out.
So the drip method is, in fact, you mention it to them and they acknowledge it, but nothing happens, right? And you've got two choices then. You can say, they'll never get it. Or you can just say, well, I've got to pick patience. So you mention it again the next day or the next week, and they start to sort of, they maybe even argue with you a little bit about it. And it's amazing. After several weeks, it becomes their idea. And you know when it becomes their idea, it's gone. It's done. You have done your job. And you don't even need the credit. I mean, it's just the change occurred. It's marvelous. It's marvelous to see. I use the boiled frog metaphor often to make people uncomfortable. I was doing a lot of work once with a check printing company. And I always figured check printing companies were going to go out of business. I mean, eventually people were no longer using checks with all the other things they were using. And this old company was trucking along. And I always said, you know, you guys are like the boiled frog, you know, even eventually, if you don't jump out of this pot, you're going to boil. And so when I finished that consulting assignment with them, as a little going-away gift, they gave me a frog.
Big green porcelain frog, I remember
right. And, you know, you got to know that little story had a lot of impact on that organization, you know.
Well, and I keep in touch with a couple of people on the board there. We were asked to go in and talk to them at one point on outsourcing and to offshore, and talk to the chairman a lot, and very interesting. And they are going through lots of change, but they believe that that their business is fundamentally going to change, and they are always on the cusp of mm-hmm. being ready to change. And their CIO has done some great stuff from an infrastructure point of view to really allow the organization to branch off into all sorts of different ways.
And they survive so well. I mean, it's amazing. The structures and everything else have gone on and every, but they're still trucking along. And it's amazing. And that company is, I mean, they started out way back when, and right down on King Street, and they were printing money. At the original, one of the people printing money, way back, like in the 1850s or something. That was a long time ago. Pretty amazing. Anyway, it's fun. Fun to see an organization like that do so well and adapt and change. And great story.
So the last thing I just wanted to kind of quickly talk about was, in one of our blog posts, you talked about the AIM methodology, and it kind of, for me, sits into the change management kind of idea, in that you're not actually just delivering a PowerPoint presentation and walking away. You're actually keeping those senior people on. And it, you have to be very careful, because senior people are also very expensive, so you don't want to blow development project budgets by mm-hmm. having this overhead. But one of our fundamental beliefs is that you don't walk away from a project, you stay yeah. involved. Even if it's just fractionally, you just need to be able to be there to support what you help them bring in. Just like your drip methodology, you need that constant reinforcement, because once you get started, you're going to start questioning mm-hmm. all the things, and you're maybe going to forget some of the context. And so maybe you could kind of talk about how
you structure that, you
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, well, just not necessarily structure, but the value. Like, what we're really trying to do is figure out the value of staying involved versus the challenge in a true consulting model, the pyramid model. Every senior person has to be managing 10, 20, whatever bubble below them. In our model, we don't really follow that, or that football model. But all the same, if you go and tie up, a senior architect at a retailer for the next year, you're not able to fractionalize that across a bunch of different clients as easily.
The difficulty it's classic. And we talked about the great work that McKinsey did in the Power of Productivity book. But McKinsey consulting is quite different than the stuff that we did, for example. And what McKinsey did was, they had a lot of very senior, important people, and they had a huge support research staff. So when you asked McKinsey to do some study of your organization, it was very expensive, but they put a huge amount of effort into studying your whole organization, all the environment, everything. They came up with phenomenal stuff, really, really good stuff that was of value to the organization. The problem with it is that because it was so deep and detailed and everything else, often it was way more than the organization could digest. And so they'd have these great reports that talked about absolutely everything and told them what they should do and everything else. But there was no way that they could implement something like that, because it was just way beyond them. They thought it was a great study, mm-hmm. and we had lots of those. People used to tell us what great studies we produce, and we produce really nice studies, because the old consulting way was, you do data collection, you analyze, and then you print a report. And everybody talked about our reports being the most phenomenal things and all that. The thoughts that frustrated us was that we didn't see any change. I mean, they really were pleased with everything, and they paid their bills and all that stuff, but nothing changed. And so you go back another year later, you could do the same study, and we'd be the same thing. And so we realized that we had to add something more, because we really had to be able to walk along with them. And so we struggled with different structures, and that customer information center was a great example of that, because we did a study for them as to how they could take their billing systems and everything else and put them together into an integrated customer information center where everything came into this customer information center. And in fact, they had, the guy who's the general manager had a broader vision where all kinds of stuff went into this center. And we created a design for them and an approach. And then the question was, we were going to help them implement, but how was I, as a very senior guy, going to stay involved with this project all the way along? So what I did was I structured a steering committee, which was a thing, we had a lot of these steering committees, and it was the senior directors, the director of IT, the director of customer service, and a couple of other directors, and myself, and we met monthly to review this project and review the status and go through it. And that project lasted, I think, 3 years. And I met with them every month, or 3 years, and it went along. And that's why I know about this weekly meeting at the end, because I was sitting in on those too, because that was really a critical point. And I think you have to help your client structure the way that you're to be involved. That's the funny thing about consulting, is that often the client doesn't know how to use you. And what you've got to do is help them structure the way that they can use you. Because I've had many clients who really would like to use my service and had no idea how they could do it. And I give them a couple of different approaches, and if they found one they liked, they went along with it. And I think that's one of the active involvements. The other one is, if there's a serious opportunity for senior management activity, that's another way of getting actively involved. And the guy we created this methodology for, that was his favorite. He would go in and help the organization manage a part of it for a while, help the transitions, implement a project, and then leave them stronger than them when he left. You know, we joined.
Yeah, and I know you did that a couple times as acting CIO during some big change, and
yeah,
helping the customer get through all that, helping them position back in, kind of hopefully get some things largely going in the right direction before the new person came in, so that in some cases you're kind of saddled with, oh, it was that guy, it was the consultant who came in that did all those bad things, not necessarily the new CIO. But no, and it's I think a really interesting point, and I think the subtle one is about working with the client to figure out how to best use you, which is really the most challenging part of it. Because in the example of what you talked about at the utility, you were probably having to be somewhat ready that if you needed to, you could dive right back in to help pick it up. And, you know, that's a time management thing and a structure thing, and you can't put too much time expectation in there if, you know, it'll blow the budget, and how do you deal with those sort of things. So, very interesting.
And it was tricky, because it was nice, because at the senior level, I was sitting on the management committee. We had some people working on the project at different levels in the project. So I actually had information about what was going on in the project outside of what was reported, you know. So I kind of knew sometimes what kind of questions to ask and that sort of thing. Some of them, it was a little tricky, because there was some deception on status of the project going on, which I knew about, but what I really couldn't kind of call them on, because it would reveal my sources and stuff. So it was some tricky stuff.
You know, that one is a big challenge, the status of the project and the fact that you'll have someone you're working for, and you're the program manager and you're trying to report the status, but, you know, people want to have what they want to be bubbling up, and you're going, well, no, that's not the truth. And, you know, it's a very challenging thing.
Sometimes they're not ready to hear it.
True.
Or they don't know how to do it if they got the information.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just pure job management, right? So, anyway, well, thanks, Jim. I appreciated you taking the time down in sunny Florida. And it was fun having a good chat. I know there's a couple of other things that we talked about that we might talk about today, but we've gone well over our time. So thank you.
Okay. All right. My pleasure.
All right. For more information about Project X, please join us at www.pxltd.ca. Or hop on our blog at pxltd.typepad.com. And look forward to seeing you on our next episode. This is a copyright of Project X Limited.